Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to IndiGo's conference call to discuss the fourth quarter and fiscal year 2019 financial results. My name is Aman, and I'll be your coordinator. At this time, the participants are in listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow today's management discussion. As a reminder, today's conference call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the call to your moderator, Mr. Ankur Goel, Head of Investor Relations for IndiGo. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the fourth quarter and fiscal year 2019 earnings call. We have with us our Chief Executive Officer, Rono Dutta, and our Chief Financial Officer, Rohit Philip, to take you through our performance for the quarter. Wolfgang Prock-Schauer, our Chief Operating Officer, and Willy Boulter, our Chief Commercial Officer, are also with us and are available for the question-and-answer session. Before we begin, please know that today's discussion may contain certain statements on our business or financials, which may be construed as forward-looking. Our actual results may be materially different from these forward-looking statements. The information provided on this call is as of today's date, and we undertake no obligation to update the information subsequently. A transcript of today's call will also be archived on our website. We will upload the transcript of today's prepared remarks within an hour. The transcript of the Q&A session will be uploaded subsequently. With this, let me hand over the call to Rono Dutta.
Thank you, Ankur. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us on this call. We announced our fourth quarter and full year fiscal 2019 financial results today. Our results for the full year were, of course, not great, in that we essentially had a break-even year. It is important to note that we made a sharp U-turn during the year, with losses in the first two quarters and then a recovery of profits in the last two quarters. We had earlier discussed the challenges that the industry faced in the first and second quarters, so it is best now to focus on fourth quarter results and the trends that we see going forward. For the quarter ending March, we delivered a profit before tax of 6.2 billion rupees, which equates to a fairly respectable 7.8% profit before tax margin. Our capacity for the quarter increased 29% year-over-year, with the domestic capacity growing at 24% and international capacity growing at 60%. International capacity now represents close to 20% of our total capacity. We were particularly pleased that our international RASK, or unit revenues, improved at approximately 13.6% year-over-year, as against the domestic RASK improvement of 6.2%. In explaining our revenue trends, it would be helpful to break it up into three factors. The first factor is what is happening to our unit revenues based on the actions we're taking internally to improve them. We have optimized the network, and 10% of our capacity has been reallocated during this quarter. We have also taken some sales initiatives to improve performance on our distribution channels. Finally, we are ensuring higher connectivity on our international flights. All these factors created a 2%-3% year-over-year improvement in our unit revenues for the last quarter. On a steady-state basis, we expect a boost of 5% unit revenue improvement for the next financial year. The second factor is the Jet Airways cessation of service that helped our revenue performance in the last week of February and the whole of March. Overall, for the quarter, we think that the Jet Airways effectively increased our unit revenues by 3%-4%. Looking forward to the first quarter of 2020, our April revenues have been strongly affected by the Jet Airways shutdown, and in that regard, April revenues have actually been stronger than even March. By May, however, as the industry has added capacity into jet markets, the Jet Airways effect has started to dissipate. By June, I think the effect will pretty much disappear, except in a few international markets where we overlapped with Jet, as in the Middle East markets. Now, that brings us to the third factor, which is the market behavior and pricing discipline. The downside here is that capacity was added rather late in the game without the full benefit of the 90-day booking window. Therefore, the most painful impact is in June in the metro-to-metro markets, where closing fares have come down quite appreciably. Unfortunately, we are also heading into a traditionally weak July-August period, and we are hoping that the new capacity establishes its footing by then. Thus, to summarize, we have an underlying 5% unit revenue improvement trend because of the actions we have taken internally. We have a Jet Airways bump that is pronounced in March and April and largely dissipates by June. And finally, we have a new capacity in high-yield markets that is still trying to find its way around. So we are off to a good start for the first quarter, but I have to emphasize that we have no visibility at this time of the seasonally weak second quarter. The shape of the second quarter will depend a lot on whether the new capacity finds traction in the marketplace and if pricing discipline is maintained. For the quarter ending June 2019 and for the full year of fiscal 2020, we expect that our total capacity will be up by 30%. Looking at our on-time performance for the quarter, our OTP was 76.6%. Our OTP has improved from March onwards, and we have reported an OTP of 90% for each of the months of March and April. We are also very proud of the many awards that we have received during the year. And I would like to thank our 23,000 employees for enabling the airline to expand rapidly, ensure profitability, and simultaneously win all these customer service awards. I'm also pleased to announce that our board of directors has recommended a dividend of 5 rupees per share. I would like to share with the investors our internal discussions as it relates to this announcement of dividend. Ever since the IPO, we've been profitable every year, while this year has just been a break-even year. We think this past year was an anomaly, an aberration, and going forward, we're bullish on our financials. Given the profile of our profitability, past, present, and expected future, we decided that we want to establish ourselves as a company that gives out dividends every year. We realize that having set such expectations, we will of course have to deliver on them. But this management team is indeed resolved to do exactly that. And with that, I'll turn you over to Rohit.
Thank you, Rono, and good evening, everyone. For the quarter ended March 2019, we reported a profit after tax of 5.9 billion rupees with an after-tax profit margin of 7.5% compared to a profit after tax of 1.2 billion rupees with an after-tax profit margin of 2% during the same period last year. We reported an EBITDA of 22 billion rupees with an EBITDA margin of 27.8% compared to an EBITDA of 11.3 billion rupees with an EBITDA margin of 19.5% during the same period last year. We reported a profit after tax of 1.6 billion rupees for the full year. As Rono mentioned, our profitability was better during the quarter compared to the same period last year, mainly on account of better revenue performance. Our total capacity for the year was 81 billion ASKs, an increase of 27.6% compared to the same period last year. Our total capacity for the fourth quarter was 22.1 billion ASKs, an increase of 29.4% compared to the same period last year. Our revenue from operations in the March quarter was 78.8 billion rupees, an increase of 35.9% over the same period last year. Our other income was 3.8 billion rupees for the quarter. Our RASK for the quarter was 3.63 rupees compared to 3.43 rupees during the same quarter last year, up by 5.9%. This improvement in RASK was primarily driven by higher yields, partially offset by lower load factors. While our yields were up by 12% to 3.7 rupees, our load factors were down by 3 points to 86%. Our CASK for the quarter was 3.35 rupees compared to 3.33 rupees during the same period last year, up by 0.6%. Our CASK excluding fuel was 2.09 rupees in the current quarter, an increase of 6.7% from the same period last year. Excluding the impact of currency depreciation, the increase was 4%, which was primarily driven by an increase in our maintenance cost. Our balance sheet continues to remain strong. Our cash balance at the end of the period was 153 billion rupees, comprising of 61 billion rupees of free cash and 92 billion rupees of restricted cash. Our debt at the end of the period was 24 billion rupees. Before I close my remarks, I would like to mention that we have adopted the new lease accounting standard, Ind AS 116, with effect from 1st April 2019. This standard requires us to capitalize our operating leases, and as a result, we will record a lease liability and a corresponding asset associated with these leases on our balance sheet. In our P&L, there will be a reduction in operating lease expense, offset by an increase in depreciation and interest expense. I would like to emphasize that while you will see some changes in the balance sheet and P&L as a result of this new accounting standard, nothing changes with respect to the fundamentals of our business or the cash flow that we generate. With this, let me hand it back to Ankur.
Thank you, Ronu and Rohit. To answer as many questions as possible, I would like to request that each participant limit themselves to one question and one brief follow-up if needed. And with that, we are ready for the Q&A.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Anshuman Deb from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and congratulations for a great set of numbers. My question was regarding the structural improvement measures that you were referring to, which in terms of capacity relocation and higher international share and the sales and distribution mix. So the effect of this would be around 5% for the next year in terms of fare growth. And that is, was that you meant when you said that?
It's not necessarily fare growth, it's unit revenue growth.
Unit revenue.
Yeah, could be fares or load factor, but yes, 5% year-over-year improvement is what we see going forward.
Okay, and my question was regarding the wide-body order which we kind of contemplated for the international expansion. We have any color on that? Any further details on that?
So wide-body, there's nothing imminent.
Okay.
Are we studying it? Absolutely. But are we about to place an order or do we see something happening in the near future? No.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Binay Singh from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi team, thanks for the opportunity. My question is basically we've guided for around a 30% expansion in ASKM. Could you share that, you know, what percentage will go in international and what is the impact of that, positive or negative, to the P&L? Because you're growing quite fast in the international business, so I assume that must be a little bit of a drag on earnings. And similarly, what percentage of that is going to go towards NEOs? Thanks.
So we've consistently said that of the capacity coming forward of 30%, half will be domestic, half international. So half of the 30% goes domestic and the other half goes international. All our new aircraft are coming in on NEOs.
Yes.
So it's all 100% NEOs, which is helping us in reduce our costs. And in terms of the international being a drag, you know, we really have an S-curve of profits by market, if you will. And it's got both domestic and international in it. Some of the international traffic is very profitable, higher than some of the domestic profits. So there's no blanket statement of one being more profitable than the other. And the reallocation tries to optimize all that, to try and move this S-curve to the right, if you will. So whatever average profitability we have a goal of moving the entire basket of markets to the right, and some of those are domestic, some of those are international. Did that answer your question?
No, yeah, that's quite helpful. So, you know, like in the previous presentations, you've talked about that, you know, when the ASKM growth slows down, the unit profitability will start to improve. So that sort of lever is still left with us, right? Probably 2-3 years down the line when you see ASKM slowing down is where that will kick in.
You know, that is one of the, you're right, that is the accepted wisdom in the industry, that, hey, slower growth is good, higher growth is bad. Fortunately for us, that's not true. We have so many high profit markets that we are going into that we are very, very excited about them. And there's always a sort of slot issue or a constraint of some kind. And so when we find them, they're actually more profitable than averages. So I wouldn't assume that growth comes at a price of profitability.
Great. That's very helpful. I'll come back in the queue.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ronald Dalal from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. So I have two questions. So my first question is on the international strategy. How do you think that, you know, since you're aggressively growing in international, how do you think that you'll be able to compete with the much stronger balance sheet and experienced players? So what is the strategy there? Because now, so far we've been focusing on domestic, but now for the last year or so, we are looking to move in international. My second question is on the domestic front. Being the largest player, how do you think fares will behave given passenger demand is coming down a little bit, capacities are going up? And on the antitrust, if there's any kind of information you can give, because now your market share is near 50%.
Okay. So let me take you had 2-3 questions there. I'll take one at a time. So the first question is competing internationally with the established players. And I assume you're talking of British Airways, Singapore, Emirates, all of those. They have a very different business model than we do, as you know. They're full-service carriers. They have business class. The economy is a smaller part of the entire cabin. And their cost structure is much higher than ours. So we are a different animal in the market, if you will, and though we don't go head-to-head with them, and we are very successful with the business model. So when we fly to Dubai, yes, Emirates is well-entrenched and we are a new player, but we are highly profitable. So, and we expect that to continue. And if you look at our international expansion, when we talked about the four-corner strategy, we really try and fly the shortest flight to get people into our network. So we really are a low-cost operator, and frankly, our model has proved to be hugely successful to us. There was a second question, I think, on?
Domestic.
So I have to say, part of our business model is affordable fares. So please don't assume that what's happening here is a lot of fare increases. Of course, with Jet, admittedly, March, April, there was a fare increase. But as I said, by June, it's back down again. So our profitability is not driven by increasing fares. Our profitability is driven by flying into the right markets with a low cost. And then there was a third one about antitrust or market share or something. Look, we are dedicated to building air transportation system in India that's second to none. And that's what we're trying to do, and we don't know where that model takes us in terms of market share. What we do know, that we'll be connecting all these tier 2 to tier 2 cities in sort of high-frequency flying so that people can move around more easily. And that's what we're trying to do. Let me give you some examples of that. We know how important tourism is to India. So we are building this Buddhist circuit, now connecting Gaya, Varanasi and Gorakhpur, which has never been done before. And we are connecting it to both Calcutta and Delhi, and we expect to sort of really boost tourism into those markets. In the Northeast, we are not waiting for the government to tell us to increase flying, but we are taking the cities there like Dimapur, Silchar, Aizawl, Agartala, and we are connecting all those cities to both Calcutta and to Guwahati. And then again, as I said, we're developing a plan to take tier 2 to tier 2 connections without going through the metros. So these are all things that we're doing to improve the transportation system in India. And I hope the authorities and everyone will see what we're doing and appreciate that.
Sure. And one last thing. So actually, besides, focusing on the passenger revenue and ancillary revenue, what are your views, or is there any thought over the medium to longer term to enter, say, allied businesses, like, say, a little bit on, say, airport infrastructure or something where you maybe have some sort of tie-ups with, say, tourism companies or, for example, some booking service companies?
Look, we stick to anything. We know what we're doing, we are good at what we do, and we have no plans to sort of expand into other areas that we know very little about.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Achal Kumar from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for that, the opportunity. I had three questions, actually, if I may. So one is around the operational challenges. So where are you in terms of your operational challenges on the Pratt & Whitney, on the pilot problem? And the third one, which is not yet started, is like IFRS 16. So when are you planning to incorporate IFRS 16 into your books of account? And what sort of challenges do you see around that? Second, I wanted to understand about your aircraft financing strategy. Are you still looking at complete sale and leaseback, or is there any change in your aircraft financing strategy? And the last one, I wanted to understand about what's your view on the low cost business class on the long haul operations. I mean, I understand that it was in the news that you're thinking about offering low cost business class seat. Is that true? And then what sort of strategy you are looking around that? Thank you.
Yeah, Wolfgang here. I start with answering the questions on PW and the pilot questions you asked. First on PW, we see a strong improving trend of our performance. Our technical dispatch reliability is 99.85, which is actually comparable, 100% comparable to other engines. A lot of improvements have been achieved in the last 1 year. If you look at, for example, there are always rolling trends of certain parameters of the engine performance, which have, let's say, in terms of in-flight shutdown rate, has been reduced by half and is now very, very much below the international standards, required standards. So we are absolutely confident that all these measures which have been initiated by PW show results. For most of the issues, resolutions have been found and are implemented. And we have right now two areas where we focus on together with the manufacturers. This is for one, this is the blade at the third stage of the engine. There is a solution implemented for all deliveries all deliveries in June it starts. And another area for a gear where we have also expect a solution by September to be implemented. So all these methods are under control. We have no AOGs. We have sufficient spare engines. And so we are absolutely comfortable now how the engine is operating. On the second point, you mentioned the pilots. If you recall, we had a pilot shortage 3-4 months ago. I have to admit that. But in the meantime, we have, release about 40 captains every month. In the meantime, we have caught up with sufficient pilots and have enough numbers to execute our expansion program. So we are well on track. And looking forward, we also have something like 285 Jet Airways pilots who already joined us, and they will be online within 3 to 6 months. And I expect this number of 285 to increase further. So looking forward, we will have sufficient pilot to execute to support our expansion program.
Great. So this is Rohit. I'll address your questions on accounting standard 116 and the sale and leaseback question. So first on 116, I think in my prepared remarks, I talked about the fact that we have adopted the new standard as of the 1st April, where we are going to our operating leases will be on balance sheet. I'll give you a little bit more color in terms of rough numbers. So roughly we will have a lease liability of approximately 140 billion rupees that will be on our balance sheet, and a corresponding asset of about 130 billion rupees will also be on our balance sheet. So that will be the balance sheet impact. On the P&L side, for the financial year FY20, the coming year, we would expect it to be roughly neutral. The reduction in lease rent expense will be almost exactly offset by the increase in depreciation and interest expense. So P&L impact will be neutral, which is kind of what you would expect. The accounting standard is only trying to bring a liability on the balance sheet. The only other issue that I will point out is that we will be marking the liability to market and that impact will flow through our P&L. So depending on the change in the exchange rate, the mark-to-market of the liability will also affect our P&L. So that's 116.
And on the business class issue, we've said repeatedly, I think, that, look, airline business really segments itself strongly of less than 6 hours flying and over 6 hours flying. And the less than 6 hours flying, the business model has been tried, tested, and is established everywhere around the world. In the long haul, over 6 hours flying, many people have tried. No one has come up with a good model yet. And I'm not saying we have any of the answers either. So when people say, are you going to do a business class? Are you going to go wide body? Are you going to go long haul? This is very preliminary in our thinking. So we're just putting our thoughts together. So all options are open at this point on that regard.
And so this is Rohit. Just to finish up on my on 116, there's just one more point I wanted to add. I think most of you on the call are very familiar with the fact that the airline industry for years have analysts and investors have always looked at off balance sheet debt and estimated an adjusted debt number using different lease capitalization factors. Some people use 5 times rent, some people use 7 times rent, etc. So there's nothing really new with the standard other than it puts it on the balance sheet. I also wanted to address your question on other financing model. So we primarily have been relying on sale and leaseback the sale and leaseback model to finance our planes. Having said that, over the last year and a half, we've signaled that we would like to start owning some planes outright with the cash flow that we generate. We had started buying, I think we own about 12 of our ATRs, which we bought outright with cash. We had planned to buy some A320s, but because of the little bit of an uncertain financial environment over the last year, I think over the last many calls, I'd explained that we sort of temporarily slowed down our sort of thoughts to buy planes. But as our cash starts building up, it's certainly something that we will utilize some of our cash balance to buy some planes as well.
Okay, Rohit, but what I understand is that I take this very positive, which you said that there is a neutral impact on the P&L other than the Forex impact, because generally what I understand is that young leases are penalized more in the initial years, and you have all the young leases, so which are not appreciated. So in the initial year, that should have a more impact on the P&L. I'm not sure if I'm true, but that's what I get from the international airlines and international standards.
Yeah, see, you're absolutely right. The issue is that most of our leases are 6-year leases, and so on average, you'll have our leases that we're capitalizing, which will sort of be sort of on an average life. It's not so if that would be true if we had if our leases were like 12-year leases, but here this sort of early part of the lease is the first 3 years, and the latter half is the next 3 years, and so because our leases are short term, that's why the effect. You won't see that big an impact.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sonal Gupta from UBS Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good evening. Thanks for taking my question. Just could you give us some more insights on the 5% unit revenue improvement that you talked about? I mean, is this going to come because of faster ancillary revenue, cargo growth, etc., or do you see, because you said this is driven by internal initiatives, right? So,
Right. Now, look, cargo, ancillary, those are also important areas for us. I would also say that so far we've been handicapped in cargo a little because we are flying routes that are not cargo rich. As we go internationally, we do get more cargo rich. So I would; those are add-ons. Yeah, cargo should do better. Ancillary, the same thing. As you go long haul, people will tend to buy more meals. They will tend to sometimes have 2 meals. So all that are potentials, but I'm not including that in the 5%. We had a project team put together in around December, January, and we said we need to improve our unit revenue and what can we do. And these are the three areas we focused on as low-hanging fruit. That doesn't mean that that's all there is going on in the company. Of course not. We have got initiative to improve customer service, initiative to improve cargo, initiative to improve ancillary, as you suggested. Those are not included in the 5%.
Okay. And just another question, if I may, is just on the international slots, I mean, how does that allocation take place? I mean, do you need permission from the, I mean, like, say, flying to Middle East or somewhere? Would it
be? Absolutely, absolutely. So there are two issues, and they're looked on almost separately. Domestically, you're talking about slots. And it's not just Delhi and Bombay, as people seem to think. There's also like, can you get a slot in Lucknow or Pune and Goa? Everywhere there's a slot issue. So those are domestic. Then you come to the international flying, and they are governed by bilaterals. So, you know, who has how many bilaterals by country is an issue, and who has applied for it. So with take Jet is a good example to focus on. Jet has shut down, and a lot of authorities, if you will, that are now available. So several discussions going on with the ministry. Everyone's applying for some of those. But we can't fly them until the ministry approves them. And they'll approve them by saying, okay, Indigo, you get this, and Go Air, you get that. And after they give us the authority, then we have to start the slot process again. Because if they just say that you can fly Mumbai to Hong Kong, doesn't mean you can start flying. You still have to go to the Hong Kong airport and get a slot. You still have to go to the Bombay airport and get a slot. So, yeah, for international, it's a two-step process. First get the bilateral authority, then get the slots at both airports.
And would that require any payments also for international slots, like, say, to Hong Kong?
No.
Or?
No. I mean, if you're going to Heathrow, yeah. But all these others, but they are highly slot constrained, let me tell you. I mean, getting a slot in Hong Kong is not easy. We have some rights that we have not been able to use because we don't have the slots. So these are tough to negotiate and get.
That's one of it's not like this, the slots itself, the airports don't charge you for, but they charge you landing fees. So that's their model is they charge you landing fees.
Sure. So basically, but given that we have a certain fixed number of bilateral flights which are there from India, and say now Jet's allocation obviously going out, so you can get or other people can get those slots. So then you don't need an approval from the other government to fly, right? So you just need approval from the Indian ministry and then negotiate for the slots with the airport.
That is correct.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I'll join back with you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepika Mundra from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for taking my question. As your stage length increases with the increasing international mix, does that factor in into your 5% unit revenue growth?
The 5% unit revenue growth is a set of actions that are taken on a specific project. So everything else remains the same. As we talked about cargo, our CASK, our RASK, everything remains the same and goes along with the trend. This was a very concerted, specific project effort to try and give our unit revenues. So it doesn't affect anything else.
Understood. And could you give us like a little bit more color on the slightly longer haul routes? How is the utilization now trending? I mean, the newer routes that you've launched, and particularly on the return, are you getting enough demand on the 6-hour, 7-hour routes?
Yeah, we are very pleased with it. I mean, I'll tell you, the only route that, as you can imagine, with Delhi-Istanbul, because we now have a fuel stop, that one is an issue for us until the Pakistan airspace opens up. But by and large, most routes are doing well. We are happy with the utilization, happy with the profitability. So, yeah, as I just read in my prepared remarks, year over year, international actually improved sharper than domestic did. And so we know how much of an impact Jet had on the domestic. International overlap with Jet is not that much, except in the Middle East. And yet we are performing very well. So, yeah, we are pleased with international.
And one last question, if I may. You mentioned that you plan to give out a dividend each year. Any specific dividend policy in terms of a payout?
You mean in terms of what yield are we targeting? No.
Yes.
It'll depend on profitability. What we're saying is we are committed to make sure we earn enough profits to give out enough dividends, but it'll all depend on what percentage profits we're making and our other cash needs for that matter. As Rohit said, we would also factor in that we'd like to own some more of our airplanes.
Got it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Santosh from SBI Cap Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, many thanks for the opportunity. I had two questions. First one, on the non-fuel CASK side, you did mention, you know, it's gone up in the quarter by about 6.7%, and part of it is due to the movement in Forex. You did mention that some bit is attributable to the maintenance side, which has seen an increase. Just wanted to understand, is this more of a one-off, or we should expect this to continue going ahead?
Yeah, so Santosh, the you're absolutely right. So I said the 6.7 was partially Forex and partially maintenance. Forex, without Forex, it was 4%. The majority of the 4% is maintenance. This is something that has been there for the last year or 12 to 15 months, as we've had a number of our older aircraft, the CEO aircraft that went through lease extensions, go through a second shop visit. And the second shop visit is usually at the 8-year mark, which was not sort of originally anticipated, because originally we expected to keep all these aircraft only for 6 years. So I think I've explained on the last couple calls as well that we have this bubble. I think this bubble will continue through the next year or so, but it starts to dissipate over the next year. So we won't see it. We'll see it come down slightly over the next year, but then this sort of bubble will be behind us 2 years from now.
Sure. So this is mostly linked with the average age of the fleet, so to say. That's how one should read it, right?
Yes, that's correct. Sure. So as those older aircraft exit the fleet and are replaced by NEOs, this bubble will sort of be behind us.
Understood. The second one was around the A321 NEOs that we've started adding now. Just wanted to understand the unit cost structure. How is it different from the A320 NEO?
It's in the range of 8 to 10% better on a unit cost basis than the A320 NEO.
So this is compared to A320 NEO, is it?
Yes, NEO to NEO, 321 versus 320 NEO to NEO.
Okay, all right. Thanks so much.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Suraj Chheda from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Thank you. This is Joseph from IFL. I had a couple of questions. One was, right now, you know, when we look across the economy, we are seeing a significant slowdown in many consumption categories, be it autos, be it FMCG growth or consumer electronics, etc. I just wanted to check whether you are seeing a similar trend in your category as well, you know, especially when you hold the fares constant on a like-to-like basis.
Actually, we are not seeing that kind of slowdown that the press is reporting. So, you know, the press reports that traffic has gone down. The fact is that passenger traffic is very closely correlated to capacity. So if capacity goes up, traffic goes up. If capacity goes down, traffic tends to go down with it. And recently, capacity has gone down, of course, led by the MAXes, the grounding of the MAXes, and then, of course, jet. So, again, the correlation is very tight. Now, going forward to May and June, looking at our load factors, they're bouncing back up nicely. So if you were to say, so what do you think is happening to airline traffic in the next near, in the short term, we'd say it's going to be up 10 to 12%. That's our best forecast.
Got it. My second question was, based on your internal estimates, what do you think domestic industry capacity will grow in FY20? Any rough sense that you'll be able to give us?
That's very hard to say, because we know our numbers and everyone else's numbers, I think, are sort of speculation. So as you know, Spice got a lot of jet airplanes. Vistara is talking of the same. So, no, we don't have a clear sort of sight into other people's growth plans. It seems to be very volatile at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vinit Malu from Birla Sun Life Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. I heard you say that, you know, your fares have not gone up. It's more about, I mean, your margins have basically increased because of different routes and your costs coming, being under control. So just want to understand, you know, your yields show a pretty decent, increase on a year-on-year basis. So, just if you could throw some light on that, how much is all of that mix?
Right. So, as we said, March and April were strongly affected by jet, and fares did go up. The rest of it, remember, jet is overlaps on us in about 40% of our routes. So 60% of the routes, there is no jet effect as such. So what is happening there is we do have strong routes, we do have weaker routes, and to the extent we optimize our network by saying it's almost like a plumbing problem. Where is the choke point? Try and add capacity there. And where are the pipes empty? And try and take capacity out of there. When you do that, you get an automatically improvement in yield, although in each specific market, fares haven't gone up. So it's this mixed change that creates most of this impact, but acknowledging completely that March, April, and May are affected by jet.
Sure. So no, I want to understand, let's say your yield show approximately 10% improvement over last year in this quarter. So would it be fair to say that you know, more than two-thirds of it is because of mix and the rest is because of fare? Because not all routes would have seen fare increase.
Right. So as we said, of our 5.9% improvement for the quarter now, I'm not steady stating it to the next quarter. Last quarter we had a 5.9% unit revenue improvement, and we looked at that and said, how much is that because of our actions and how much of that is because of jet? And our best guess is that 2.5% of that is us doing stuff for the quarter, and the remaining 3.5% or so is because of jet. So you can use that ratio as to what's happening in the marketplace.
Okay, so when you say, you know, fares have now again come back down, so that means only that part will actually go down. The balance of
right.
Balance gain you'll actually continue to retain going ahead. Is that a fair understanding?
That's why I tried to give it as, like, that you have to understand three different factors. One is, what are we doing in terms of this mix? And don't forget, there's sales channel initiatives, and there's international connectivity. So don't just focus on the optimization of the network. All three had an impact. And we said, how much is that? So we gave you that number. That's a 5% steady state. We're saying for the whole year, we should get it. Year over year, we should get a 5% improvement. Then we said separately, there's a jet impact. And we said the jet impact was strong in March, stronger in April, coming down in May, and disappears in June. That's the bump effect. And then we said, however, there's a third effect, which is actually a negative, which is much of this capacity has gone into metro-to-metro markets. And in metro-to-metro market, before we had established players doing their thing, and it was a steady, pretty steady or stable environment. And now we have new players coming into that market, and they're coming in very close in. I mean, you know, they don't have a 90-day booking window. So the third impact is actually negative in terms of this new capacity coming into high-yield markets. So those are the three trends we were trying to delineate one from the other.
Okay. And my last question is regarding this, now that you mentioned, you know, that initial squeeze which happened and which took fares up, which is behind us, that hump, right? So, you know, now how do you see the situation, especially in that, you know, up to 15 days bucket? How do you see fares and competition behaving in that bucket?
So in June, we said that 0 to 15 day window, the fares are weaker, appreciably weaker. So after through May, we are good. After June, it seems to be getting weaker. But again, as they get this 90-day booking window behind them, they could behave differently. I mean, clearly, if you're going to put in a flight into Bombay, Bangalore with a sort of 20 days notice, you'll rush to fill the seats, right? And it is going to bring down fares.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. Understood. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Nitin Agarwal from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my opportunity. Sir, like you said, to capitalize the lease, in the industry, people use somewhere around 5 to 7x. So if in FY19 we see we have a 50 billion of aircraft rentals, so if we use 5 to 7x, the capitalized lease should be somewhere in the range of 250 to 350 billion. However, you said a rough cut lease liability which will be coming in our balance sheet will be around 140 billion. So can you explain the difference of what is being missed, and or maybe you can reconcile it this for us?
Yeah, it's actually a very simple explanation. Our leases are 6-year leases, while sort of that normal industry standard of 5 or 7 times is assuming more like a 12 or 15 year lease. So because our leases are 6 years, they have sort of an average life of 3 years. So our number is going to be more like 3.5x number, which is sort of the, which will reconcile more closely with the number, which will reconcile the number I've given you.
Okay. Thank you. That answers my question.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mayur Mela from India Nivesh. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah. Hi. Two questions from my side. One, just trying to analyze. So, DGCA recently reported the April numbers. Now, what we see is that Indigo has gained significantly. We see a 20% YOY growth in passenger traffic for Indigo versus the -5% for the industry, and we see zero. Market share improvement for SpiceJet. Now, what I don't understand is while there are the media reports that, you know, that SpiceJet has picked up a lot of Jet Airways aircrafts, we haven't really seen any benefit really flowing there. So, just wanted to understand that do we see that impact coming now and will it hit both us in terms of, competition and the yield benefit?
So you have to remember that first of all, the capacity went down because of the MAX grounding, and then they're trying to bring in this jet aircraft. And the jet aircraft, you know, they're coming in at a certain pace, if you will. So I don't think they're all in there and all flying at full utilization. So they had a bump down because of MAX building up, and that's why I said it's kind of volatile when you say, what is the domestic capacity going to do next year, especially in the next 3-4 months? It'll all depend how quickly Spice is able to get these planes up in the air.
Right. And secondly, continuing on the same thing, so while we've seen, your personal traffic growth really going up by 20%, you are also mentioning that you're going to see an addition of about 30% in your ASK for the quarter and for the year as well. So even if, that growth rate continues, my sense is that your fixed cost will be up for about 30% of the capacity while you'll be generating revenue for about, let's say, 20%. That is when I'm assuming that you continue with the same kind of growth, which you yourself are mentioning that you are now seeing a kind of zero to diminishing impact of the jet really going forward. So I'm just trying to understand that how have we planned our cost when, the fixed cost initially looks to be going up because of higher capacity addition for the company.
Let's see if I can decipher that. So you're saying our costs will grow faster than the revenue? Is that your concern? No.
Yes. So my sense is that, most of the aviation cost is kind of fixed in nature. When you add 30% capacity, you are definitely adding a cost of 30% addition. As we rightly know that SpiceJet has become aggressive, the other guys will start coming into the metro routes. The yields might again go back into pressure. So just trying to understand, is there any other lever left with us other than, the external yield where, we could still continue the kind of performance that we've generated?
Well, look, I mean, I'll have to say that I look at this at a market-by-market basis. And I say, are we gaining or are we losing? And I'm very comfortable that we're gaining ground. I mean, so our system, remember I talked about choke points. Our biggest choke point was Mumbai. So we look at each market, we say, okay, Patna, Coimbatore, Lucknow, I want to do this, where are we going? And it's like, okay, we're doing well in every direction, but in the direction of Mumbai, we're choked. Now, suddenly now, Mumbai has opened up. That clearly makes a big impact to all our markets where the traffic was getting choked before. Then we look at the Middle East markets. The Middle East markets also long term, there has been a reduction in capacity because of jet. And I'm saying, hey, that looks pretty good too. So, then I can go eastwards. And we're quite optimistic about the markets we're going to fly into Asia. Well, actually, no one is flying today. So as we said, we'll go to Hanoi and China. We'll be the only Indian carrier flying into those routes. Metro to metro, we used to have some gaps in our schedule. And just to make this more live, if you will, we were like, oh, if we only had a Mumbai-Chennai in the morning, we're missing that. Well, now we have a Mumbai-Chennai in the morning, which we didn't have before. So, you know, if I look at every market, it's like, wait, there's a lot of room to be positive here.
On the cost structure, Wolfgang here, I mean, it's quite a big amount of our costs are fixed costs, and naturally when we expand, they stay like this or only decrease much below the increase of our capacity. And the way we plan our expansion is the most efficient way, because we bring in our own aircraft which we have ordered in the same configuration. We bring in also bigger aircraft like the A321. So all this tends to lead to much lower unit costs going forward. And so I didn't fully understand your question that fixed costs grow more or less the same rate as the capacity induction. In our experience, it's not the case. And coupled with the, let's say, very homogeneous growth with our own aircraft coming in, no sudden introduction of business class, which naturally brings up unit costs. So we don't need to bring in other aircraft. All that coupled together, I think your calculation will show that this will have a very positive effect compared to the industry.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Manish Oswal from Nirmal Bang. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. Most of my questions already answered. Only one question.
So, Oswal, we request you to use the handset so you're not audible clearly.
Sure. Most of the questions have been answered. Only one question I have. As per the media report, there is some differences between the promoters. So can you update on the same, sir?
Like we said at the press release, we want to confirm that there are absolutely no differences on strategy, no differences on international expansion, no differences on management selection. There is one issue that they're debating right now, and we hope to resolve that in the very near future. So only one issue remaining, it is being debated, and we're very optimistic it will be resolved shortly.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Chokalingam Narayanan from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
The last question was what I wanted to ask. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chintan Sheth from Sameeksha Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Bhavin. Could you comment on what sort of, you talked about the unit revenue improvement from the initiatives. Could you comment, you know, based on the fleet improvement and the 30% ASK growth, what sort of improvement can we expect for fuel cost, you know, with the pricing, assuming the same price? And also, because of the further economies of scale, what sort of improvement can we expect in your CASK?
Yeah, so in terms of fuel, this is Rohit. In terms of fuel CASK, you know, as we continue to take on more NEOs, we will see a 15% improvement in fuel burn. So if you look at our CASK, if you look at our fuel CASK for this quarter and compare it to the same quarter a year ago, our fuel CASK was 8% better. Even though fuel prices coincidentally were actually roughly the same a year ago and this quarter. So that is primarily driven by the improvement in NEOs, as well as some improvement in the fact that we've had increased international presence, which international capacity, which because of a longer stage length, you burn less fuel on an ASK, on a per ASK basis, and lower fuel taxes in international as well. So those are the two points, but the NEOs definitely contribute a portion of that, and that you'll see going forward. And as we get more and more NEOs and some of the older planes exit, you'll see that that increase. As far as the overall CASK goes, you know, with the sort of the non-fuel CASK goes, as you see A320s coming in, I think I mentioned earlier to another question that we see about an 8 to 10% improvement on unit costs of A321s versus A320s, NEOs to NEOs. So that we'll see improvements from that as well.
So if I may just ask one follow-up on that. So if I take, say, Q4 next year, before FY20 rather, versus Q4 that you just completed, and all else being the same, the prices of fuel and everything, what sort of improvement can we expect on a 12-month basis on those two parameters?
So I think I've given you sort of the information that I could give you. I think the on both fronts. Okay.
Sure, I understood. On your other income hasn't come down. You know, one thought that with your lot of money moving into foreign currency, you know, it would come down. So what is the reason? I mean, can we expect it to continue at this kind of levels?
It will start our interest income, which is based on the interest we earn on the deposits with foreign currency, will start coming down with a reduction in with the foreign currency deposits. So you'll start to see that coming down.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sonal Gupta from UBS Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question again. Just on the international, one is, do we see this expansion largely to be 321 led in that sense? And the second thing was also in terms of, just taking your numbers on 50% of capacity going into international routes, seems to imply like a 80-90% growth in international ASK for the year, and like you were hinting at that it's not easy to get slots, etc. So are we, is this already pre-modeled build out, or given that things have also opened up with Jet, we could actually, this is including that benefit, just some color there.
So the growth between now and December of this year is pretty much sort of signed, sealed, and done in terms of we've got the slots, we've got the bilaterals, etc. Going forward from December to the rest of the year, we're still applying for slots, applying for bilateral routes, and so on. So most of it is done. I would also say that, the international, really, people seem to think that, oh, as you grow, you're growing into less profitable areas, and that really is not true. Many of these international markets we are quite excited about, that they will be highly profitable. And don't forget, for every international passenger, you really get a bump of about 0.3 passengers domestically, because every international passenger tends to do a domestic connect or does a domestic route. So all of that makes us quite optimistic about our route network going forward, with international being a major add.
Dave, we can add here that the good thing about the A320 families that we can use the aircraft in a very flexible way. There are certain routes which might require only A320 size, and a lot of routes will require A321. So actually we can deploy our family from all parts of the country on our international routes, and it's a very, let's say, heterogeneous network we are having on international. So that A320 family will play a very important role, both A320 and A321 for us. And the A321 has the added benefit that we can also use the aircraft on high-density domestic routes where the airports are slot constrained. That will also give us an additional advantage with the A321 forward.
Right. So would you be able to indicate a number for how many A321s we expect this year?
Here's a big one. I can tell you total aircraft. Well, the total number of deliveries we're expecting this year is 53 narrow bodies, meaning A320 and A321 combined, and 11 ATRs. This is through the next financial year. Now, this is not all growth, because there's some aircraft returns as well.
We'll be in the magnitude of 15 A321 in this financial year.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that would be the last question. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ankur Goyal for closing comments. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you all for joining us. I hope you found the call useful.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Indigo, that concludes today's conference. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.